The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to today's podcast, sponsored by Hillsdale College. All things Hillsdale at hillsdale.edu. I encourage you to take advantage of the many free online courses there. And, of course, to listen to the Hillsdale Dialogues, all of them at hughforhillsdale.com, or just Google Apple, iTunes, and Hillsdale. Good morning, Ambassador Haley. Welcome back to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Good morning, Hugh. It's great to be with you again.
I was just playing your comments with Jake Tapper. I'm going to come back to your husband's deployment and the former president in a moment. I want to begin with the breaking news. The United States Senate just passed a $95 billion bill that will aid Israel, Taiwan, Ukraine, and our defense industrial base. Would you have voted for that if you were in the Senate?
Well, first of all, I mean, I think we have to look at each of those separately. I don't ever like when they like group a bunch of things together because you can't dissect it. The first thing I'll say is, I don't believe we should ever give any country straight up cash because you can't follow it and you can't hold it accountable. I do think that supporting Ukraine with equipment and ammunition is preventing war because Putin has made it very clear that once he takes Ukraine, Poland and the Baltics are next. Those are NATO countries. That puts us at war. So helping Ukraine win this is preventing war. Israel, that is preventing a terrorist threat. You know, we know Israel's the tip of the spear when it comes to defeating terrorism. And so for us to have the backs of Israel, I think, is very, very important. And I'm not sure what else was in the bill.
Taiwan and our defense industrial base. Now, Speaker Johnson has said, Madam Ambassador, that he's not going to bring it up. A discharge petition will circulate. Do you recommend that the bill that Republicans sign the discharge petition in order to pass the aid as it's written?
Well, rather than talking about Congress, I think the American people need to know what's in the bill. I mean, the first thing I'll tell you is the problem I have with both Biden and Congress is they don't ever think the American people deserve to know anything. They don't tell them why they need to care about Ukraine. They don't tell them why they need to care about Israel. They don't talk about what the issues are with Taiwan. They don't talk about what's in a bill. And so then you've got members that just tell you parts of what they want you to hear. They don't tell you the full story. And I think that's the first place where I know as president and what I did as governor is I always over-communicated. I told everybody everything I knew and then got them invested in where we were going to go from there. So what I will tell you is, show the American people exactly what's in it. Yes, we need to support Ukraine with equipment. Yes, we need to help Israel so that they can defeat terrorism, who says death to America. Yes, we need to make sure that China doesn't invade Taiwan by making sure that Taiwan can properly defend itself. But we need to make sure there's no straight up cash in there that's just going to go to where we can't follow it. And so that's the issue that I have is we can't afford to waste any more taxpayer dollars on things that don't actually prevent war and protect national security for the American people.
I believe there is straight up cash in there. I believe that they're giving money to Ukraine for humanitarian aid. That said,
I'll tell you if there's before they were giving money to Ukraine to also run their government. And that's something the Europeans can give that money if they want to. That is not, I don't think America should ever give straight up cash.
So you would be a no in the House or the Senate?
I would be quit making this a Christmas tree bill and let's make it right. The other thing I want to say about this, this was the same thing with the border bill, is just because a bad bill goes out there or just because a weaker bill goes out there, Congress doesn't get to wipe their hands and walk away. You stay in there and you fix it and you get it right. That's the problem that Congress is not getting anything done, is go in there and don't stop until it's exactly what the American people need. All they do is peacock on TV and talk about how, oh, it was bad or, oh, it was good or, oh, this got defeated. But they never go and do anything to get it right. And Congress has gotten very lazy that way. And the American people are tired of it.
So let me now turn to Israel. The President Biden has cautioned Israel about going into Rafah, where the Hamas leadership and the hostages are. What do you think about that? And ought the IDF finish the job now and aid come later?
I wish he would put as much energy into calling out Iran, calling out the Arab countries who support Iran, calling out Hamas for what they did. I mean, I've seen this game before. Everybody runs to Israel's side when she gets hit. But then when she hits back, everybody wants to condemn her. And I think the problem is, Israel has to protect themselves. Hamas has made it very clear they will do this again. You cannot blame Israel for the fact that they're trying to defend themselves. But let's think about what's happening in Gaza. Everybody should feel, bad about the people in Gaza. But why is it Egypt taking them? Why isn't Qatar taking them? Why isn't Jordan taking them? Why isn't Turkey taking them? The reason they're not taking any of the people in Gaza is because they can't tell which ones are Hamas and which ones aren't. That's the same thing with Israel. So don't treat Israel with a different standard than you're treating the rest of the Arab community.
So my last question about Israel is that President Biden said in the press conference that melted down on Thursday that from the beginning, Israel's response has been over the top. And it's clear he meant Israel, didn't mean Hamas. Do you think Israel has been, quote, over the top?
On that day when they beheaded those people and burned those babies alive and took those girls from the concert and raped them and dragged their naked bodies through the streets of Gaza. And you think about what they said, death to Israel, death to America. No, I don't think that's over the top. I know Israel well enough to know they value life. And I know they'll do everything they can to take care of life. But at the same time, you can't expect them to tiptoe around terrorists who just brutalize their people.
I think you meant their response is not over the top, not the actual attack, but their response is not over the top. Would you support the invasion of Rafah at this moment, even though there are a million Gazans crammed in there?
I think what I would do is tell Egypt and Qatar and Turkey to say, what are you going to do to get Iran and Hamas to stop? No pressure is being put on Iran. No pressure from any of the international community. That's the first thing I would do is say, go to these countries and say, what are you going to do to make Iran have Hamas pull back? What are you going to do to stop that? That's the first thing, because you do want to go and save as many lives as you can. But if that doesn't work, then that's on the Arab community. That's not on Israel. And we've got to make sure that we eliminate Hamas very clearly, because it's not just Israel that's in danger. It's America that's in danger. And we've got to do whatever it takes to protect our allies and protect ourselves.
We're going to take a short break, but you mean going by eliminating Hamas, that includes Hamas and Rafah, correct, Madam Ambassador?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to be right back with Ambassador Haley. I got to go to break for some of our affiliates down the line. I'll talk to her off air. We'll play that on air afterwards, and we'll be back right after these messages. Don't go anywhere, America. Ambassador Nikki Haley battling in South Carolina for the South Carolina primary, which is on February 24th, I believe, and then Michigan 2 days later, and then Super Tuesday in just a couple of weeks. I'll be anchoring the pre-game show on Super Tuesday on the Salem News Channel, and I will be around, I think, on Fox that night. Stay with us. I'll be right back with the ambassador after this. I am back now with Ambassador Nikki Haley. Ambassador, I have written a piece for Fox News this morning saying Joe Biden should simply resign. He is not competent. He's infirm, and I've known that for a long time, but now the HER report has persuaded me he's impaired. Do you believe the president should resign?
Yes, I do. And I think the Democrat Party knows that. And I think that it is not just in the best interest of their party, it's in the best interest of the country. What I will tell you, and I've said this from the very beginning, the party that gets rid of their 80-year-old candidate is the party that will win. We cannot have a country in disarray and a world on fire and have two presidential candidates in their 80s when we need someone who's going to put 8 years into making sure that we are disciplined, focused on getting our economy, the border, preventing war, and getting our country back on track.
Many Republicans recoil in horror at the prospect of a year of President Kamala Harris. What do you say to them? Because I agree with you. I think President Biden simply has to get, because crises come and go, and there's one right now in Israel. But what do you say to the Republicans who say we can't have Harris for a year?
Well, I can tell you that we are going to have a president of the United States, a female president of the United States. It will either be me or it will be Kamala Harris, because if Donald Trump runs, you have seen in multiple polls, he cannot win a general election. There was a Marquette poll just 2 days ago in Wisconsin. He does not defeat Joe Biden. I defeat Joe Biden in Wisconsin by 15 points. Look at all the other swing states. But not only that, Hugh, look at the fact Donald Trump lost in 2018. He lost in 2020. He lost in 2022. But look at last week. He loses his case on immunity, so now he's going to be Citizen Trump. We lose the bill on censoring Mayorkas. We lose the bill on Israel. The RNC chair loses her job. The RNC is broke. And Trump has spent $50 million of campaign contributions on his personal court cases. You can't win a general election like that. There's no way. Okay. And we can't afford a Kamala Harris. That should send a chill up everybody's spine.
But I want to move on to what the president said about your husband. But one more question. If Biden resigns, and you and I agree he should, that means Kamala Harris for a year. Can we do that? I mean, can she handle it for a year, do you think? At least, she's all there, but she's not very competent.
No, I don't think Kamala Harris can handle it, but I don't know that she's any worse or better than Joe Biden. I mean, right now, you look at the leadership there, it's terrible no matter what you do. But the idea that Russia, China, and Iran can see that we have a, you know, mentally diminished president is a threat to all Americans. Because right now, what keeps me up at night is what happens between now and Election Day.
And did you think Mr. Herr was out of line when he said an elderly man with memory problems?
I mean, look, I think that we have to always make sure that none of our agencies are political, and that's why they all need to be cleared out. But you look at Joe Biden from 2 years ago and you look at Joe Biden now, he's not wrong. I mean, look at the press conference Joe Biden gave after that. He was angry. He was, lashing out. But what happened? It gets countries confused. We see it in a press conference. We see when they have to go grab his hand and help him off stage. It is not a good look for America. And it's terrifying for me knowing Russia, China, and Iran know we're at our weakest point. And when America is weak, when America is distracted, the world is less safe. And right now we are watching that with the wars happening all over.
I'm coming right back with Ambassador Haley. Stay tuned. We want to talk about what former President Trump said about her husband when we return. Don't go anywhere, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. Ambassador Haley and I will play for you after Senator Cotton joins me, the balance of our interview in the in-between spots. Ambassador Haley, I played your conversation with Jake Tapper last night, so we know what you think. The audience knows what you think about the president's attack on your husband who is deployed. Did the president, former president, ever meet your husband while you were the ambassador to the UN? Does he know that he's in the army?
Yes, he knows he's in the army. Yes, he knows that he's deployed. He knew he was deployed when he said that. He's met him on multiple occasions. I mean, this is not a place for me or Michael to take this personally, because in politics, I think that's what's wrong with politics. We see it with Donald Trump. We see it with Joe Biden. Everything is about them and they take it personally. What bothers me is this is about every military man and woman out there. This is about every military family who sacrifices and knows what it's like to have their loved one deployed. And this is about a pattern of Donald Trump. I mean, he has said this before where he calls military members suckers or losers. We know that when he was at Arlington Cemetery, he said what was in it for them. He has never even been close to a military uniform. And for him to go and mock my husband or any of our men and women in the military, it shows how disconnected he is from the sacrifice and what these men and women do every day, not because they care for themselves, not because they do it for fun, but because they know that freedom isn't free and they're willing to shed blood for it. And the idea that he'll go and make light of something like this is exactly the reason we continue to have problems with him. When he leaves the teleprompter, he is unhinged. And everybody can say whatever they want to say in terms of, oh, he was a great president. An unhinged president is an unsafe president. And if you'll go talk about those men and women who serve us, you don't deserve to be president. And he's never so much as been in harm's way, except for when he's in a golf cart in danger of getting hit by a golf ball. That's it. I mean, he's never once. He supposedly had bone spurs, and that's why he didn't go and serve. It's inexcusable, it's disgusting, and it's uncalled for.
Last question, Madam Ambassador. Michigan comes after South Carolina. The poll show you're behind in South Carolina, I don't know if you're closing. Where are you in Michigan vis-a-vis Donald Trump?
I mean, our focus is we're taking it one step at a time. We are now, we've got people, you know, we've got some things we're doing on the ground in Michigan. We've got some things we're doing in Super Tuesday. Our focus right now is very much on South Carolina. And, you know, our goal is to stay competitive. We're going to continue to do that. You know, we were competitive when we got into Iowa, when we started at 2% and ended at 20%. We were even more competitive when we got 43% of the vote in New Hampshire. We're going to even focus on being even more competitive in South Carolina as we go into Michigan on Super Tuesday.
Are you in this through the convention?
I'm going to continue to go through Super Tuesday because I think that we don't do coronations. I think, you know, you look at the fact that Trump came out and said anybody that supports her is permanently barred from MAGA. When you're running for president, you don't push people away. You bring people in. That's how you win a general election. That's why he can't do it. But the second thing is, what did he do? He tried to have the RNC name himself the presumptive nominee after only two states had voted. Let South Carolina vote. 10 days after South Carolina, 20 states vote. Let those states vote. And the fact that now he's throwing out people in the RNC and replacing it with his people, that is no different than him naming himself the presumptive nominee. This is getting into territory that everybody should see red flags. This is not okay when someone now goes and takes over a party so that they can control what happens from here all the way until the convention. It's, you know, I mean, I can say this until I'm blue in the face, Hugh. But you can only overlook so many things before you start to say something's very wrong.
Ambassador Nikki Haley, your team has given us the red flag. Thank you so much for joining us. I'll talk to you again, hopefully before the election in South Carolina and Michigan. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks so much. Go to NikkiHaley.com and join us. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Senator Tom Cotton joins us, Senator from Arkansas. Good morning, Senator. Welcome.
Good morning, Hugh. Thanks for having me on again.
I would like to play for you an exchange I just had with Ambassador Nikki Haley. Roll the tape. Do you believe the president should resign?
Yes, I do. And I think the Democrat Party knows that.
Senator Cotton, do you agree with Ambassador Haley and me that the president should resign?
Hugh, on this one, I think I have to disagree. Not just the president's resignation or the cabinet invoking the 25th Amendment or the Congress impeaching him, because you know what happens if Joe Biden resigns and who we're stuck with. That is, if there ever was a case of getting out of the frying pan and going into the fire, substituting Kamala Harris for Joe Biden might be the case.
I asked her about that. She's at least mentally competent, Senator.
Well, maybe.
Her judgment isn't very good, but she can remember what people tell her.
Hugh, just if I may offer a few observations. What's driving this, obviously, is the report last week from the special counsel that they called the president a well-meaning elderly man with a failing memory. He couldn't even remember what years he was vice president. I mean, that's not Hugh. That's not asking someone like what year they took algebra in high school. I mean, when being elected the vice president is a pretty significant event.
1970. All right. So I know when I took algebra in high school, so I know that.
Better than I did. Okay. But it makes it clear, too, that this is not just a problem now. The special counsel, and remember, what's a confidential report? He did not disclose this. He is obligated by law to file a confidential report to the attorney general and explain his reasoning. This is Merrick Garland who released it to do away with that criticism of Mr. Herr. But he had to explain why he didn't recommend charges against President Biden when he leaves office, because all of the elements of the statute are there. And people have focused in part on the so-called affirmative defense that Joe Biden could offer, which is basically just that he's a well-meaning elderly man and everybody feels bad for him in 2025 or sometime later when he's out of office, when he's facing charges. It wasn't just that, Hugh. It was in 2017. When he was a private citizen, when he was working on his memoirs, that he had these memory failures as well. So it's not just that he would be a sympathetic defendant, it's that the special counsel might not be able to establish the intent element of the law because as far back as 2017, Joe Biden might not have been mentally competent to meet that intent standard. So the issue here, Hugh, is not that Joe Biden is running for president again. The issue is that he ran for president in the first time, and then he inflicted Kamala Harris on the nation as the vice president. I believe, as I have from the day he picked her, as 25th Amendment insurance. That is on him and those close around him who pushed him to do this for years. And unfortunately, I think that the country is stuck one way or the other with Joe Biden or Kamala Harris for another 11 months. The way to solve this problem is to elect Donald Trump.
And now, we will have to disagree on that because I think she can remember her birthday. But let's move on. I think we also disagree. I think you voted against the Senate aid package of $95 billion for Israel, Taiwan, and Ukraine and our defense industrial base. Why did you vote against it? Because I would have voted for it.
I did, Hugh. And I understand your view, and I understand the views of, you know, 20 or 22 of my Republican colleagues as well. As I've said from the beginning, I supported all the priorities we worked on from last fall, securing our border, aiding Ukraine, aiding Israel, helping protect Taiwan from a Chinese attack. However, we did say for many months to the people who elected us to address their highest priorities and protect their interests, that we were going to pass the aid parts of this bill in return for the Democrats being willing to protect our border. We undertook a negotiation led by James Lankford, a good man who worked hard with a bunch of stubborn Democrats, to see what the Democrats were willing to do on the border. We now know the answer to that is not very much. You yourself last week said the border package that came out of those negotiations was unsatisfactory. I agree
Correct.
With that point, as did all but four Republicans. That doesn't change the fact that we still need to take action to force the hand of a stubborn, recalcitrant president and his party, who's more invested in open borders than they are in securing our border, for that matter, helping our allies overseas.
Now, you were a member of the House, Senator. You know the way the House works. There's going to be a discharge petition. Would it be better for Speaker Johnson to take up the Senate bill and amend it to provide for the border wall and those provisions that serious people about the border approve of, and then send that back to the Senate?
Well, Hugh, what I think has to happen is what happened last summer on the debt ceiling. This is the point Senator McConnell made about the debt ceiling. The way to get a compromise that can pass into law is to have the Speaker of the House and the President negotiate directly with each other. That's what needs to happen here. And the President has to recognize that if he wants to pass this aid into law, he's going to have to stop the abuses he's done at the border, especially on asylum and parole. I do want to point out to you, though, in addition to missing anything about serious border security from the bill also had about $19 billion in non-military aid. That's about 20% of the total. That's $7.9 billion to budgetary support for Ukraine, which may be necessary. I don't think the United States should take a tap for that. It's $9.2 billion in humanitarian aid to Ukraine and the conflicts in Israel, as it's called, and something called other vulnerable populations and communities. We have no idea how that's going to break down. It may end up going almost entirely to Gaza. That means it's almost certainly going to be misused by Hamas. There are some guardrails in the bill. I just don't think they're adequate because Hamas doesn't divert aid or steal aid or commandeer aid. Hamas accepts aid. Hamas and its cronies are the governing authority in Gaza. So I don't think we should be funding that as well. We didn't give humanitarian aid to Germany and Japan in the middle of World War II. And there's other stuff in there, too, like $1.6 billion to post-Soviet states for things like climate change resiliency and green energy, or $481 million to a bunch of left-wing globalist NGOs who are trying to accelerate more migration as opposed to stop it. So putting aside the fact that it didn't have any border security measures in it, it also had about $19 billion of spending that I don't think was necessary. That would be better not spend at all, or better spend on things like 3 new submarines, or 170 new stealth fighters, or more than 5,000 precision strike missiles.
Well, I don't disagree with that. I hope the president is willing and able to negotiate. But if he isn't, I hope the discharge petition passes. Senator Cotton, thank you so much for joining me this morning. I appreciate it. We'll talk again next week. I want to remind everyone, a great sponsor of the program is MyPhDWeightLoss.com. Generalissimo went on that program more than a year ago, lost 50 pounds. He's kept it off. And stress eating is not allowed, I don't believe, even though we're under a lot of...
Sure tempted to this week, aren't we?
Everybody is. But we don't. I'm sure they give you tricks of the trade to combat that, because that's one of the habits. You broke that habit. You're not going by Del Taco or Taco Bell.
Have not. No.
You haven't relapsed.
Have not relapsed.
And that is and it's healthy, it's wise, it's productive.
864-644-1900.
That's
864-644-1900.
Do you believe the president should resign?
Yes, I do. And I think the Democrat Party knows that.
Welcome back, America. That was Nikki Haley last 20 minutes ago. I'm joined by Charlie Spearing, who's the author of Amateur Hour, a brand new book about Kamala Harris. You just heard, Charlie, Ambassador Haley said Vice President Harris should become President Harris today. And I agree with her, by the way, because I don't think the president's competent. What would that mean for the country, having just written a book about Kamala Harris?
Well, yeah, Hugh, that would be, you know, very, very difficult politically for Democrats if that happened. That's their worst nightmare. They really want Joe Biden to make it across the finish line, because if it's a contest between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, I don't think there's any question that Trump beats Kamala at this point.
But what would she govern like? Just play along for a moment, because I don't think the president's all there, Charlie. And I don't want to make this an interview about him or her. H-U-R, special counsel her. But just assume for a moment that she becomes president. Based upon your book, Amateur Hour, by the way, the lunch rule is if you don't say Amateur Hour seven times in the course of an interview, people won't remember Amateur Hour, and they won't buy Amateur Hour unless they can remember Amateur Hour. So always follow the lunch rule and say Amateur Hour often. But based on what you know about her, having written a book about her, what kind of a president would she be for a year?
Yeah, I think if she ultimately became president, I think she'd do a lot of house cleaning. There's a lot of Biden, top Biden advisors that she is not happy with. She feels she's been mistreated by the Biden administration. So there'd be a little bit of a revenge tour there to sort of clean house and make the White House her own. And then we would be sort of put on the stage watching her try to demonstrate her capacity on the national stage, when what we've seen in the past 3 years has shown that she really struggles to even communicate basic ideas to the voters, and also has a hard time, you know, taking even the most lighthearted criticism.
What is the most surprising thing you learned, Charlie, in writing Amateur Hour? Because I can't imagine spending I did a book on Mitt Romney once, a biography. So they're hard to do. But I can't imagine spending a year studying Kamala Harris's record.
Well, during the 2020 primary, the Democrat primary, I focused more on Pete Buttigieg. And so going back and looking at her 2020 campaign and just how many mistakes there were, how awful it was, how she was just not ready to run for president, didn't even have a clear concept of why she wanted to run. I was most surprised by that, because if you go back and look at that campaign, there's no way that any politician would choose her as a vice presidential candidate.
How could she fool people like me? I voted for Stephen Cooley when he ran against her for attorney general in California. I used to live in California, and I didn't think she'd win then, but she did. I thought she was pretty impressive. How did she fool me? I mean, how did she fool everyone?
Well, when you run in California, right, you're not necessarily out there convincing voters that you're the one that you know, deserves to be voted for. The first thing you do is convince the donors and the party leaders that you're the person to do it. And so a big part of it is just showing up and demanding a place on that stage. And certainly when she got to the Senate, she had a little bit of, you know, popularity, a little bit of viral success, really portraying herself as the superhero to fight against Trump. But as it shows, like, she always was looking for the next political position and never really took time to. People in the Senate knew that as well. They knew that Kamala was not a serious senator. She was just one of the showboat candidates that wanted to run for president. And I think that she demonstrated that pretty quickly in her first couple of years as a senator.
Charlie Spearing in Amateur Hour. And again, it's available in all bookstores, at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you want to go. And it's just Amateur Hour. And you spell Charlie's weird last name, Spiering. I mean, I don't know what Spearing is. Is that Australian? I don't know. But I don't know Doug Emhoff very well, the second gentleman. I don't know him at all except by email. I do have very good friends that are very good friends with him. They tell me He's incredibly smart. What did you discover about the second gentleman when you wrote Amateur Hour?
Yeah, Doug Emhoff is very popular in Washington, and they describe him as the happiest person in Washington, D.C. He's really sort of come into this moment really gleeful by the idea of, you know, rubbing shoulders with top people and doing whatever he can to boost the administration. And he's really enjoying it. You know, Kamala Harris, there's signs that she's still struggling in the role, but Doug Emhoff is doing just fine.
Well, he's a very good lawyer. He's very well respected in the L.A. and the Southern California legal community. Why does she get, we got 1 minute, Charlie. Why does she run through staff the way I run through interns?
Well, a big part of it is that she just doesn't inspire them to stick around. She's behind the scenes. She's sort of thin-skinned, casts blame, does not take responsibilities for mistakes, and almost a bully, as some people described her. So when you have somebody like that, people in Washington know that a person like that isn't going anywhere. So that's when you bail. That's when you head to the Pentagon or the State Department, like so many of her staff have already done.
At the conclusion, if she becomes President Harris, Amateur Hour will be the quickest, that'd be the bestseller in America. Would Donald Trump or Nikki Haley beat Kamala Harris?
Oh, I think absolutely. There's no question. You know, it's deeper than the word salads. Go back, read about all about her in the book. You'll find out the truth.
The book Amateur Hour. What you still didn't say seven times, Charlie. Amateur Hour. We got to work with it. What a rookie. Amateur Hour. Amateur Hour on Amazon.com by Charlie Spearing. Markets yesterday mixed. Let me give you the gold price this morning for my friends at AmericanFederal.com. A great sponsor of the program. Call American Federal at 800-221-7694. Gold this morning is at $2,042 an ounce. If you're worried about the world and you're worried about inflation and you want to buy gold, American Federal is where you go, mfed.com, or simply call them at 800-221-7694. Ask for Nick Grovich. He will help you out. Morning glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live from California in the ReliefFactor.com studio. Good Tuesday morning to you. The BBC just released. I'm always live, so I'm always telling you what just happened. The Super Bowl ratings. They were the largest, the biggest, the most extraordinary number since the moon landing of 1969. On average, at any given moment, 123.4 million people were watching it. In the United States, we don't know what the worldwide audience is yet, by far the biggest television audience since Apollo 11 landed, which was somewhere between 125 and 150 million, you know, 50 to 54 years ago. I don't know how many years ago. 1969. I got to tell you, that's extraordinary. And what's really extraordinary is that Joe Biden preferred not to do an interview for that audience. And we all know why. He's too feeble. Which brings me to two stories. Number one, the Wall Street Journal interviewed Kamala Harris the day before the Robert Hur report dropped. And she said she's ready to serve as president. She's ready to step up. Quote, there's no question about that. She replied when asked if she's ready to sit in the Oval Office. Ready to serve. Well, it turns out I wrote my Fox News column this morning about Joe Biden. And the headline of it is simply, President Biden should resign now. We all see it. We all know it. But will the president act in the country's best interest? President Biden should resign, it begins. We have known for some time that the president is infirm, but infirmity goes to physical capacity. He moves stiffly. He tires. Public events are rare and always fraught. I pause for a moment from reading my Fox News column to point out that yesterday he got confused with the King of Jordan. It's a pretty awful little video if you want to watch it. He stands on one side of the King of Jordan, then he moves to the other side of the King of Jordan, then he moves back to the other side of the King of Jordan, and the King of Jordan looks around and says, what's going on here? And the answer is, he's Joe Biden. I return to my column. The president is now also revealed as not merely infirm, but is impaired. Biden cannot remember basic facts. He cannot deliver even the simplest line. Reports of his angry temper and his profanity are consistent, if not with dementia, then certainly with an ability to weigh and judge important matters with a calm and a coherent mind. Most Americans have sympathy for the aging, the infirm, and the impaired. Many have themselves to deal with aging parents or friends. Very few churches do not have beloved octogenarians for whom younger adults are eager to be solicitous and of help. Most Americans have fond memories of grandparents who, when on their games, provide unconditional love and encouragement. None of that has anything to do with a very old man showing that age being president. There are some jobs in the federal government that can't be handled even by the 80-somethings. Many senators have ambled through an unofficial retirement while casting votes in accordance with the suggestions of their party's leadership. Senators Strom Thurmond and Dianne Feinstein, for example, stayed on in the Senate long past their ability to process information. A very different situation from that of, say, Senator Charles Grassley, who at 90 may not sprint down the marbled halls, but he knows exactly where he's going and what he intends to get done. Presidents are not, however, one of 100 senators or one of 435 representatives. Crises are different from legislation. When the Cuban Missile Crisis arrived in 1962, or Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait in 1990, the Soviet Union dissolved in 1991, 9/11 befell us, President Bush ordered the invasion of Afghanistan and then the invasion of Iraq, the financial collapse of 2008 shook the world, COVID arrived, and Operation Warp Speed on vaccines followed. Each of these moments of crisis and decision, the president and only the president must lead. And the president must have the capacity to decide and lead. President Biden does not have that capacity anymore. One person alone must take in all the facts in each of these crises, remember them, absorb all the counsel he receives, remember it, and then choose wisely and consistency, staying the course on which the president embarks, adjusting policy as new facts emerge. It's not a job by committee, but one man or woman's job. And it is painfully clear that Biden can no longer do it. The most obvious deficiency, part of the most critical job, is in communicating with the American people. For the first time in my memory, the United States embarked on a significant military campaign, this one against Yemen, and the president did not address the country about why. He didn't even do the softball Super Bowl interview. Biden is not trusted by himself or his staff to engage in any serious sit-down with a journalist, much less the many exchanges with journalists he ought to be having. He's sequestered because Biden knows, as do the people around him, he is not up to the job, not for another year or, God forbid, 5 more years behind the resolute desk. We have Special Counsel Herr's assessment after long investigation, interviews, and deliberation. We have our own eyes and ears that watched and heard Thursday night's meltdown. We have an increasing lava flow of red-hot scoops on Biden's blistering temper and descents into profanity. We know. We all know. It isn't the mix-up of Mitterrand and Macron, Kohl and Merkel. It's not the serial sets of halting prepared remarks, his inability to read the teleprompter, his wandering about on stages or the hooks he gets from staff when the rambling has gone on too long. It's all of it. We all know. And crucially, so do our enemies. Do not expect Vice President Harris and the cabinet to trigger the 25th Amendment. It is not designed with advancing cognitive incapacity in mind, but rather the dramatic and undeniable strokes and heart attacks. There could well come a day when the president blurts out such a string of inanities and non sequiturs so troubling that the Veep would make some calls, but don't count on it. We are in Woodrow Wilson territory already, and Vice President Harris is pretending with the rest of the Beltway that this is fine. Many Republicans and independents recoil from the prospect of President Harris, but she is most definitely not going to be an FDR or a Reagan, but she can remember the year she was married and what the National Security Daily Intel Briefing reports. She might make decisions that appall, but they will be her decision, not the text statements from whichever committee is hammering them out right now. We've been warned about this situation. No less an authority than Alexander Hamilton wrote about it in Federalist Number 70, one of the most famous of the essays that successfully persuaded a young country in 1788 and 89 to adopt a constitution which endures still. Quote, "A feeble executive implies a feeble execution of government," Hamilton wrote. "A feeble execution is but another phase for a bad execution, and a government ill executed, whatever it may be in theory, must be, in practice, a bad government." Close quote. Thank you, Alexander Hamilton. We have such a bad government now, with a crisis on the southern border, a failed splurge of trillion on Bidenomics, which unleashed inflation that torments everyone who buys gas and grocery, and of course, Americans under attack across the Middle East by Iran's fanatics. Fanatics who do not fear Biden. Israel has now begun to glimpse what an erratic and infirm president means. It's a warning to us as well. Please, whomever the president listens to, speak candidly to him. It is time for him to go before another crisis arrives, one of which he is simply not capable of handling. That's this morning's FoxNews.com column by yours truly, Biden Must Resign. Now, Harley noted there's a pattern. My podcast yesterday was entitled Joe Biden Must Resign. In Washington's first look with E.J. Dionne and Jonathan Capehart, I got them upset because I said Biden should resign. This is simple truth. Biden should resign. You know it. I know it. Everybody knows it. Everybody sees it. It's like the Geico ad with the blue hair. Everybody sees it, but I'm not saying don't say it. I'm not like the doctor in the Geico ads. I'm saying it out loud because you're thinking it. He has got to go because he doesn't know what he's doing. Just watch yesterday with the King of Jordan. It's every day. He doesn't know what he's doing. And we've got to have a president. It is that simple. I'll update you when we come back. Senate's going to pass Ukraine aid. I think there will be a discharge petition in the House. Nikki Haley coming by today. Senator Tom Cotton, David Drucker, Byron York, and more. Stay tuned to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Along with Queen Rihanna, who's meeting with Jill now and the Queen.
Queen Rihanna is now married to the King of Jordan. We didn't know that Rihanna had married the King of Jordan. But David Drucker was probably ahead of me on these cultural developments. Good morning, Drucker. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh.
The president, I mean, he can't do. Can I play you one more? I got to play you cut number five. He's at the National Association of Counties yesterday, cut number five.
And by the way, you know, they're building these what they call fabs, they're factories. You know what those? How much those factories pay? They pay about $110 a year.
So what do you think that means?
Well, look, Hugh, I mean, this is just a regular thing. And the president, you know, is going to have to try and find a way to work through it. The issue he has politically is that voters are very concerned about his age. They have been for at least the last 6 months in the polling that we've looked at, maybe the last 9 months. And I think that the challenge for him is that the opinion many voters have about his age trickles down to the opinion they have about his ability to manage particular issues, such that they're not necessarily, although they could be, but they're not necessarily dissatisfied with his leadership of the economy or any particular issue. They've concluded he's not able to manage the economy or any particular issue because of his age. And so it's like a double challenge as he campaigns for president to put together the coalition he needs to win in November.
Now, David, I think he should resign, and this is not partisan. I hope I would say this if I thought I was around Reagan after he left the White House 4 years later, and it was obvious at that point he'd begun to slow down a step. But it wasn't as bad as Biden is now. Cuban Missile Crisis, 1962. You've got the Mayaguez in 1975. You've got the invasion of Kuwait by Saddam in 1990, the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. You've got 9/11. You've got the invasion of Afghanistan, the invasion of Iraq, the financial collapse in 2008, the red line with Syria. Crises are part of the job. He isn't up to that. Are people talking about him resigning?
No. No. There is discussion in Democratic circles about the sort of hope and a prayer of finding or somehow having a different nominee. But these are quiet discussions that I don't really think have much purpose or intention right now. It's just, you know, a recognition that he is politically vulnerable because of how people view the impact of his age on his ability to lead. When I talk to Democrats who deal with him directly or deal with others who deal with him directly, there's never a concern that he actually can't do the job. There's a concern that people believe he can't do the job. And so we'll have to see in an era where parties really don't have any power, and particularly with incumbent presidents, the party is the president, whether there's a way to convince him to reconsider, because, you know, it appears now that he has no intention of reconsidering.
Yeah, 2 days before Nixon resigned, Goldwater, who was a 64 nominee, John Rhodes, who ran the House, and at that time, Hugh Scott, who ran the Senate for the Republicans, all went to CRN and said, you got to go. There is nobody who recognizes the country would be ill-served in a crisis by a man who can't remember where he was yet. He can't. His mark. It's the easiest thing in the world to stand where your mark is. And he couldn't do that with Jordan yesterday.
Yeah, look, I don't think that they don't believe he could manage a crisis. I think they believe he is managing several crises at once. There are political concerns. But again, I don't know that elected members of a party exist separately from the president in the way that they did back then, when they believed that members of Congress now operate in a much more parliamentary fashion. When the president of their party is in power, they defer. When the opposing president's in power, they don't defer, and vice versa. And so you just don't have the same sort of atmospherics and thoughts about leadership from the other branch of government from within the party that you did back then.
All right. So the Senate is about, you don't think he should resign? I do. My column's over at Fox News. You can find it at X. David, the Senate has just passed or is about to pass $95 billion in aid that will go to Israel, Taiwan, Ukraine, and America's defense base. Speaker Johnson doesn't want to bring it up. There will be a discharge petition brought by Democrats and Republicans. They need 218 people to sign it to bring it directly to the floor. Do you think it will get 218 people to sign on?
Well, first, I want to see if the discharge petition happens and if we start to see Republicans jump on board. Look, the party is divided on this. There are a number of Republicans that want to get this done. The question is whether or not the Republicans that want to get this done and the Republican and the number of those that might worry about a primary challenge, we're in the middle of primary season, can put together the numbers they need to work with Democrats to get this done, because there are going to be some House Democrats that cringe over the aid to Israel the same way there are Republicans that are not happy with the aid to Ukraine. And so we'll just have to see how this unfolds. I don't want to give you any predictions here because it's just really hard to predict.
I think it'll get 250 to 300 votes when it gets to the House floor. I know there are a handful of Republicans who are very vocal and a handful of Democrats who are very vocal against Israel, the Republicans against Ukraine. But that's my prediction, between 250 and 300. We will see. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live in the ReliefFactor.com studio, joined by Byron York of the Washington Examiner and Fox News contributor. Good morning, Byron. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh. Good to be here.
Well, yesterday Joe Biden announced that the King of Jordan was married to Rihanna. And, of course, that surprised us all because he's married to Rania. But Rihanna probably found that surprising as well. Do you think the president should resign? Because I've begun to – I have a column in Fox News this morning saying, look, this is obvious. He cannot handle a crisis. What do you think, Byron?
Well, I have serious doubts about him handling a crisis as well. Right now, I do not think he should resign. And I also – don't think he's going to step aside. Nikki Haley very confidently says on the campaign stuff, look, the next president is going to be a woman. It's going to be either me or Kamala Harris. She says that Joe Biden is not going to be the candidate. But I have always been saying, and I think we've had this conversation before, it's incredibly hard for a political party to oust a sitting president of its own party. And the Democrats have not shown any inclination to do that, even after this Robert Hur report.
Now, the 25th Amendment is intended for cannot miss moments, like when a president has a stroke or a heart attack or something like that. That's what it's intended for. It's got provisions for transferring the presidency to the vice president when you're under anesthesia, as Ronald Reagan did when I was in the White House counsel's office. And we had to drop all the plans for that. We being not me, but Fred Fielding and the future Chief Justice and Dick Houser, figure that one out, how to do that. But they're not going to do that. Vice President Harris is not going to call around the cabinet and say, we got to get rid of this guy. The question I'm asking is not whether he will. I don't think he will. But whether he should, Byron, in the best interest of the country. Because nobody saw 9/11 or COVID or the Cuban Missile Crisis or the collapse of 2008. You name it. There's a crisis a year in the presidency. Should he resign?
Yeah, well, I think you would probably agree that presidential resignations are bad. We've only had one, and it was really bad. So my feeling is that, no, he should not resign.
How does he get through a crisis?
Well, I mean, look, we've had a number of crises right now. I mean, obviously, you had Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which threatened a larger war in Europe. And then you have Hamas's attack on Israel, you know, which you've talked about at great length as a huge, huge crisis. Now, he's not handling it in a way that Republicans would want to do it, but he's actually handling it, the Hamas-Israel thing, in a way that Democrats, a lot of Democrats, find reasonably acceptable. Because they view handling the crisis as putting pressure on Israel to let up in Gaza.
Yeah, he started well. He started strong.
Yes,
he
well,
flew to Israel.
Exactly what he wanted to hear.
That was great. And now, yesterday, he's saying, it's over the top on Thursday, which surprised everyone in Israel. And then today, he's saying, we got a 6-week ceasefire, which nobody knows about. Byron, I think there comes a time where people need to go to the president and say, you're not functioning. You've got creeping old ageism. I'm not going to call it dementia because I'm not a doctor, but I know old ageism. And this is a different guy than ran for president.
Yeah, well, they used to just call it senile or senility. So you didn't have to make a diagnosis like you've got Alzheimer's or dementia or something like that, which I've also not a doctor, don't believe he has. I think he's just slowing down in a way that people do slow down when they hit certain ages. Some people wouldn't do that until they're 90. Maybe somebody would do it at 75, but he's doing it right now.
In real time, in front of our eyes.
Absolutely. But some of the things that you find so problematic are things that the Democratic, as far as the Hamas-Israel situation is concerned, are things that the Democratic Party actually approves of. So when he says that, you know, Bibi is a jerk and he's really trying to, you know, pull Israel back and all that sort of thing, a lot of Democrats want to hear that. His party wants to hear that.
All right. Now let me switch over to politics with you because I've got Ambassador Haley coming up next hour. Does she have a shot?
No, I don't think so. It's interesting. In South Carolina, we've got more polls from New York 3 than we have from South Carolina.
I didn't know that, really.
Oh yeah, we've had two. We had the Washington Post poll, and then a Morning Consult poll, and those are the only polls we've had of South Carolina since Iowa and New Hampshire.
What do they show us? Two to one, Trump.
Trump. You know, the last one, the Post poll is, I believe, 58-32, so it was a 26-point lead. The Morning Consult poll was bigger. Trump's lead was bigger. And over the months, if you go back several months, Trump has had around a 30-point lead. I don't think there's any indication that anything big has changed. So if you want to be kind of brutal about it, the press is in South Carolina pretending there is a race, and then covering the race that everybody is pretending exists.
I agree, but I'll give the ambassador a chance to answer that. What about Michigan, which follows 2 days later?
I haven't seen any polling from Michigan lately. It does follow 2 days later. But the thing is, you know, in my experience, I don't know what you would say, in my experience, if a Republican candidate wins Iowa and then wins New Hampshire and then wins South Carolina, they win. And so when you talk about a candidate, you know, candidacies only end when they run out of money. And Haley has gotten a lot of money lately since she's been the only candidate to challenge Trump. But, you know, they can also end when they just run out of support. And so far, Haley has not had enough Republicans to vote for her. Her big problem is she doesn't have enough Republicans to vote for her.
Okay, rational, very unemotional take on this. She's going to hang around to the convention on the off chance that something happens to the president.
Absolutely, and I've written about this. The battle between Haley and DeSantis was a battle to be the backup if Trump implodes, if somehow all of the lawfare directed against him actually works. So far, it's backfired on Democrats. But if it actually works and takes him out, or if just something happens, some deus ex machina event just happens, then they will be there. And the party will need to choose somebody, just as they would with Biden, actually. It's better if you choose somebody that people have actually voted for.
Right.
So, yes, Haley would be in that position.
If he's abducted by aliens between now and then,
correct,
it'll be Haley. Now, the question becomes, he said these things about the ambassador's husband who's deployed, which were not good. Said these things about Russia, which were poorly received. I think it's all priced in, Byron. I don't think he could say anything. He could repeat, I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue. He could repeat that every day, and it's all priced in. Nobody's going to change their mind on this. Do you agree with me?
Yeah, I've just written about that. It's about to post my newsletter, as a matter of fact. There is this odd dynamic that plays out when he gives a campaign speech. As you know, a number of news organizations have imposed a blackout on him. They don't show his speeches live. When he won Iowa, Fox News showed his victory speech live. CNN cut away from it when he started talking about immigration. MSNBC didn't play it at all. So there's this blackout on Trump's speeches, with a big exception. If he says something hot enough, they start replaying it and get all agitated about it and obsess about it. And that has created this weird and perverse incentive for Trump. If he goes out and he gives kind of a straight speech, crickets, nobody covers it, nobody says a word. But if he drops in some big outrageous thing, then everybody talks about it and he dominates the news cycle again. And that's what we just saw with what he said about NATO. Now, he did engage in some, as you said, some really nasty innuendo about Nikki Haley's husband. I'll put that on the side for the moment. But the NATO thing was essentially a restatement of what he has said a zillion times about NATO. But he adds a little detail in there. And in fact, I would encourage Russia to do whatever the hell they want. And everybody just goes nuts.
Everybody on the left goes nuts. Everybody on the right says, yeah, that's Trump.
And his supporters like it. The fact that people on CNN are flipping out, his supporters like that. So there's no downside for him in that.
Right. Byron York on X and at the Washington Examiner and on Fox News. Thank you, Byron. It is always a pleasure to speak with you.
three-star general, Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.